Thank you, and thank you for inviting me. So let me just start off by recalling the basic arithmetic theorems for curves. So for integral points, we have Siegel's theorem that if you have an affine curve, defined over a number field, and S is a set of places, K, finite. Contain the Archimedean places, then if either the genus of C is positive or C is rational and has more than 2 points at infinity, over K bar, then the set of points with S integral coordinates is finite, and for rational points, we have Falking's theorem that if the, in fact, the genus is greater or equal to 2, then there are, in fact, only finitely many rational points. Okay, so qualitatively, everything is essentially known for curves. The problem is that neither theorem at present is effective, meaning that there's no known algorithm to provably find the finite sets in either case. However, in special cases, there are effective techniques. So, for instance, for integral points, there's the theory of linear forms and logarithms, and this allows you to effectively do Siegel's theorem for instance, superelliptic curves. For rational points, we have, for instance, the Chabot-Coleman method, and this works frequently if the rank of the rational points in the Jacobian is smaller than the genus. And what I'd like to talk about today is another effective technique for integral points, which is perhaps less known, and it goes back to Runge. So let me just state a formulation of it. So Runge in 1887, so it's quite an old technique. So let F be a polynomial in two variables over a number field, and let's assume it's irreducible, absolutely irreducible if you like. And let D be the degree of F, and F not be the leading form of F, so be the sum of terms of degree D of F. Now, the condition that allows Runge's theorem to work is the following. So, suppose that F naught factors as G naught H naught, where G naught H naught are, this should at this point only be stated for Z. The polynomials over Z that are relatively prime. So in other words, F naught is not a power of an irreducible polynomial. Then the equation f of x, y equals 0 with x and y and z has only finitely many solutions, and furthermore, they are effectively computable. In other words, you can give a bound on the size of the largest integer solution. I should say non-constant. Okay, so in this formulation, it's perhaps not exactly clear what this condition on the curve defined by F is. So let me give a better formulation that's more geometric. So C and A and B affine curve over Q, and suppose that C has at least two components over Q at infinity, then a set of integral points on C is finite and effectively computable. So this, in fact, implies the statement of the theorem that I just wrote, because this factorization condition exactly implies that your curve C will have at least two components at infinity. Sorry, say that again?
It can't be even S.
No, it has to be exactly Z. Yeah. And I should say also that the two components also have to definitely be over Q. For instance, the Pell equation has two components at infinity, but not over Q. Okay, so let me just give a sketch of how this is proved. So let C tilde be a non-singular projective model of C, and let D1 to DR be the components of C tilde minus C over Q. Now consider points P in C of Z, and as the height of P goes to infinity, P is going to get close to one of the components of infinity. Okay. So now let's construct a certain function. So by Riemann-Roch, there's some function in the function field of C such that P has a zero at DI and pulls only in the other only at the other divisors. So J doesn't equal I J. That's a simple consequence of Riemann-Arp. And okay, so since phi has only poles at infinity, it follows that there exists a constant, non-zero, such that phi of the integral points will be so that phi times phi will take integer values on the set of integral points. On the other hand, if the height is large enough, well, so we're assuming that P gets close to this divisor DI as the height goes to infinity. So if the height is large enough and it's close enough to this divisor, this is going to be less than 1 in absolute value. But since it takes on integral points, and there are no integers less than 1 other than 0, we get that phi of p is 0. So you get either, if you look at the argument, so either the height is bounded by some constant, and it turns out that you can effectively compute this, or you construct some function phi on phi such that phi of phi is 0. So the set of points which satisfy this, of course, is a finite set. And on the other hand, the set of zeros of a rational function can also be easily computed by, say, resultants. And so you can effectively determine the finitely many integral points. So if the proof isn't clear, let me give an example. One can do this very concretely and explicitly. Let me just give a trivial example. So let's take the curve y squared equals x to the fourth plus 1. Of course, it's trivial by just factorization to solve the integral points, but just for the point of illustration, let me show how Runge's method applies to this curve. So this curve, after you desingularize the point at infinity, C has 2 points at infinity. So Runge's method should apply. Okay, and so as you take an integral point on this curve as x is in z, and x goes to infinity, then the 2 points on the curve, x square root of x to the fourth plus 1 and x negative square root of x to the fourth plus 1, these tend to the two different points at infinity. So let me call them p plus and p minus. Okay, so now if we follow the proof that I just outlined, what we want to do is construct a function which has a pole only in p minus and a zero at p plus, say. So a function with this property only in p minus. is phi equals y minus x squared. Okay. Now, let's see how this goes. So, assume y is larger than 0. If y is bigger than 0, then this function, which just using this equality here, is equal to y minus x squared, which is 1 over y plus x squared, is less than 1 over x squared. Okay, just a trivial inequality. So now, suppose that we have an integral point on our curve. Well, and assume that y is larger than 0, so that it's close to p plus. If x doesn't equal 0, then phi of xy, just by this inequality, is less than 1. But on the other hand, this clearly takes integer values on integral points. And so we must have that phi of xy is 0. So either x equals 0, or we have y equals x squared, which combined with y squared equals x to the fourth plus 1 gives a contradiction. So the integral points is just the set 0 plus minus 1. Okay, so in this proof, which followed the proof of Runge's theorem, the height bound just turns out to be x is non-zero. And anything larger, you get this function that you constructed, which had certain zeros and poles, must be zero. And so then you just compute the two sets, and you find the set of integral points. So in fact, this exact same argument will work for y squared equals any quartic. You can do a similar thing. And you can see you can do this procedure very explicitly. Okay, so an advantage of stating Runge's theorem geometrically is that it should, it's not hard to see what the right generalization is when you replace z by other rings of S integers. So the proper generalization is take an affine curve over number field K, and let S be finite set of places for K. Okay, and now here's the condition that replaces the condition in the earlier version of Runge's theorem I stated. Suppose that C has more than cardinality of S components at infinity over K. Then the set of S integral points is finite and effectively computable. So in the case where we were looking at OKS equal to Z, S here just has cardinality 1, it's just the Archimedean place, and so this reduces to the earlier version that was stated over Z. And the proof of this is more or less the same as the proof that I outlined over Z. Essentially, you consider an S integral point, and for some component d sub I at infinity, is not theoretically close to DI for any V and S. This is where this assumption is used. And then, as before, you construct a function phi that has poles only in DI and zeros at J for J not equal to I. And then a similar sort of argument yields the theorem. Okay, and lastly, let me state, before talking about some variations on this technique, there's also a uniform version of Runge's theorem, uniform in the set of places S in the number field K due to Bombieri. So let me state this. So let C be, so I'll give a slightly different formulation than earlier theorems, be a projective curve over the number field K. And let's take a rational function on C. And for L containing K, let NL be the number of irreducible components of the divisor of poles of phi over your number field L. Then the statement is that the set of points as you go over all number fields and set of places S in L, satisfying S, the cardinality of SL less than the number of components, when we look at integral points with respect to phi, that this set is finite and effectively computable. So this just states that, in fact, as you run over all number fields and places which satisfy this Runge condition, that, in fact, the totality of the integral points over all of these fields and places is finite and effectively computable. Okay, so this more or less sums up, with the exception of maybe explicit bounds computed from Runge's method, what I believe is known. And so now I'd like to talk about some variations on these methods and theorems. So first, let me talk about higher dimensions. Okay, so a natural question is to wonder what's special about curves in this procedure. And it turns out that if you say things in the right way, there's not really anything intrinsic to curves. So let X be non-singular projective variety over a number field K. And let's take a divisor. Which we'll write as the sum of R divisors via divisor on X. And I'll assume that each DI is ample and also defined over K. Okay, and need one more assumption. Suppose that at most M of the divisors D sub I meet at a point. And as usual, I take a set of places S in K. And now the condition is that if M times the cardinality of S is less than the number of these components at infinity, then, okay, let's choose an affine embedding of X minus D into affine space. Then, choosing X minus D in AN, X minus D, the S and all points are finite and effectively computable. Okay, so this reduces to the theorem for curves because on a curve, each non-trivial effective divisor is ample. I should have said effective. And this quantity M is just 1 since points don't intersect. And so you get, there's a generalization to higher dimensions, which is not so much different than the proof for curves. I should state that in higher dimensions, what I mean by effective here is you need to assume that you can compute some basic geometric objects with your variety, like Riemann-Roch spaces for the divisors and things like that. I should also mention that this inequality is actually sharp. If you replace it with a less than or equal to, then it's false for any choice of M. You can find counterexamples. The ampleness condition can also be weakened if you weaken the conclusion that to a Zariski density conclusion. You still need some assumption, but not very much. Okay, so I don't want to talk too much about higher dimensions, just to mention that, in fact, you can carry everything over the higher dimensions, except you need to consider this quantity of how many divisors need at a point. Okay, so the other thing that I would like to talk about is how you can expand Runge's method by taking advantage of coverings. So let me just start off with a simple example. So consider this hyperelliptic curve, which is just given by this. Now, if K is odd, then C has only one point at infinity. So Runge's method, a naive application, can never give you any information because you need the set of places that you're looking at to be smaller than the number of points at infinity, but since there's only one point at infinity, this won't work even over Z. Okay, on the other hand, however, I'm going to consider a covering of this curve. So, through the curve in AK, let's call it Y, given by DI squared minus DJ squared equals I minus J, where IJ are in 0 to K minus 1. So this curve is just obtained by setting DI squared equals X minus I, so just taking square roots of these factors. Okay, so you have we have a covering. From Y to C, given by Z naught, ZK minus 1, maps to Z naught squared. Okay, we can verify that this gives a morphism between these two curves. Okay, now we're going to want to apply Runge's method to the curve Y by lifting points from C to Y. So let P be an interval point on C, and let's take a point Q in Y with, if I didn't give this a name, let's call it C, with C of Q equals P. Okay, so if we're interested in applying Runge's method, we want to find out what field this point Q lies in. Okay, so in particular, how large is field extension, the field of definition. Okay, so now our equation for our curve C implies that VI squared equals X plus I equals AI BI squared for some integer bi and some ai with prime divisors less than or equal to k minus 1. This just follows by looking at GCDs, since the product is a square. Okay, so our point Q is obtained by taking square roots of these quantities. So you find that Q of Q lies in, let's call it L, which is Q adjoined square root of P1 to square root of P of pi of K minus 1 times square root of negative 1. Okay, so furthermore, our point Q lies in, it's an S-integer point on Y where S is the set of Archimedean places of L. So if S is the set of Archimedean places of L, then we have that just from trivial estimate that this is S is less than or equal to 2 to the pi of k minus 1 plus 1. Okay, so now we're interested in applying Runge's method on points Q obtained in this way. So the other fact we want to know is how many points at infinity there are on this curve Y. And it's easy to see that Y has 2 to the k minus 1 points at infinity over Q. So now, Runge's method works when the set of places that you're looking at for your S integer points is smaller than the number of points at infinity, the number of components at infinity. So, Runge's method will work on y as long as you have this inequality that s less than or equal to 2 to the I have k minus 1 plus 1 is less than 2 to the k minus 1, or pi of k minus 1 less than k minus 2. And since pi of k minus 1 is like k over log k, this is clearly a win for large enough k. So despite the fact that Runge's method doesn't, a naive application doesn't apply to the curve C, when you list these points by this covering, you find that they live in a field which is somehow smaller than it should be, while the number of points at infinity has dramatically increased. And so you can apply Runge's method to the curve Y and therefore conclude that you can find the points on C effectively. Okay, so using this sort of technique, what can you prove generally? I guess the problem would be that the field of definition of the points at infinity would be large.
Okay. So that's it. But the other ones, you wouldn't have the size property of the 2 to the power of k minus 1.
Yes, well, you still have some, I guess, some property on the size of the points that you lift, but then you'd need to enlarge the field to get the points at infinity to be defined over your field. But I think you could probably, I think there's more than one way you could do this procedure. Okay, so what sort of theorems can one prove with this? So let me state a result for super elliptic curves. Okay, so theorem, let P be a prime. And let's take polynomials in OK of X. And I'll assume that they're monic p to the power 3. Constant relatively prime. And let's consider the super elliptic curve, ay to the p equals f of x equals the product of the fi's. Okay, and let d be the degree of the product. Then the statement is that the set of points R equals union K prime contained. Okay, let's write down it. Okay, which satisfies this property. So write this down first. So I'll define the terms in a moment. Just to show that how explicitly one can make this. Okay, so this union of estimable points over these fields and set of places that satisfy a certain inequality, being less than the number of factors in the super elliptic curve. So here, df is the discriminant of f, omega k prime of alpha is the number of prime divisors, and the ideal factorization of alpha in OK prime. And DK is the discriminant of the number field K. CL, OK prime S, is class group. And ranks of P is the P rank. Okay, so what does the theorem say? It says that the integral points on the super elliptic curve, as you go over all fields and set of places, which satisfy this property, which can roughly be described as the discriminant and does not have too many prime factors, and your set of places is not too large in comparison to the number of factors over K of your polynomial, then when there's also a class group component, then you're in a situation where you can, this covering trick will apply to the super elliptic curve to obtain an effective finiteness statement. And in fact, you can write down explicitly a bound on the height, which depends on the height of the polynomial f and the degree and the prime. Okay, so one thing here is what's special about super elliptic curves in this process. In fact, nothing. So let me write down a more general formula. So in general, for arbitrary curves, what's really going on is that you can replace this omega k prime of a df by places of bad reduction of your curve, by the number of places. Okay, and the other quantity which was special to super elliptic curves is this quantity r minus 1, and more generally, replace r minus 1 by the p rank of the rational torsion in the Jacobian. So the fact that the super elliptic curve has these factors means precisely that if you look in if you look at torsion in the Jacobian, it's going to have rank at least r minus 1. And so more generally, you can prove something with this replacement. So in summary, you could say that the method works when your curve does not have too many places of bad reduction while having a lot of rational torsion in the Jacobian. These are the two key things which allow this covering trick to work. Okay, so finally, since we have an effective technique, it would be a shame to not actually apply it to something to get the solution. So let me finish by describing an explicit set of equations where you can use this to find new results. Okay, so I'm going to consider the problem of squares in arithmetic progressions. So this is a very classical problem. So the first interesting result goes back to Fermat, who showed that there are no four squares in arithmetic progression. This was generalized by Euler, who showed that the product of four terms in arithmetic progression is never a square. And in more modern times, we have the result of Erdős and Selfridge that the product of consecutive integers is never a perfect power, in particular, never a square. And there are a large number of other results which would probably take a whole hour in itself to fully go through, so I won't be able to do that. But just some Shorey, Tideman, so I'm not going to be able to go through all of these results. Let me just state that there's a large body of literature on this problem. Okay, so the equation that I'm going to apply Runge's method to is going to actually, so we're going to consider a general form of this problem. So let K be positive integer, and then I want to take integers gamma 1 to gamma r between 0 and k. Integers. And b positive integer is p of b less than k. So this notation means that p of n is the largest prime divisor of n. Okay, and the equation that we're going to consider, let me label it by star, is by squared equals x plus gamma 1d to x plus gamma rd, with this condition that x and d are relatively prime, and x dy positive integers. Okay, so this is a generalization of this problem of squares and arithmetic progressions, where you allow yourself to pick out certain terms from the arithmetic progression, and you require that the product be an almost square. Okay, so let me write down a theorem about this equation. So fix k and these integers gamma 1 gamma r, then all solutions to star that satisfy this condition double star, pi of k minus 1, which is the number of primes up to k minus 1, plus the log base 2 of omega d, number of prime divisors of d, plus 2, less than r, are finite and effectively computable. So under this condition, that the number of primes up to k minus 1 plus d, where d varies over all things which don't have too many prime divisors relative to r, you can find finite, you can effectively find by this covering trick with Runge's method. So for an explicit example, for k less than or equal to 17, I explicitly computed the solutions to star satisfying this condition double star. And I should say that this gives new results only for k greater than or equal to 9. So for example, if you look at the equation by squared equals x plus d, and you drop one of the factors, and we require that B have only prime divisors less than 17, and omega D less than or equal to turns out to be D has fewer than 509 divisors, then explicitly solving this equation. So it turns out that there are some 130 solutions or so to this condition. So let me just give an outline of, a very quick outline of how this computation for k less than or equal to 17 is done. Okay, so the first step is to obtain an effective bound for the solutions which satisfy this equation. And so you can compute using these theorems that the max of logarithms of x and d are less than something like 10 to the 14. Okay, this is obviously entirely too large to be able to search through directly. So need a trick to be able to search the space. Okay, so what I did, and maybe there's more than one way to go about doing this, but I considered that any solution BXYD star maps to a point on many elliptic curves of the form cy squared equals x plus gamma I1 gamma I4, where x is x over d, and c belongs to some small finite set of possibilities. Okay, so the strategy that I used was for any potential solution, find two such elliptic curves that have small rank and that you can compute the Mordell Weil group of. And then the question is that you want to find points on these two elliptic curves of small rank, which share an x-coordinate. So you have two different curves and you have a point on two of them. There are lots of choices for these gamma I1 and gamma I4. And this problem, it turns out that you can do fairly efficiently. Efficiently find points on the two elliptic curves of small rank, which share an x-coordinate. So of bounded height, I should say, because we have this bound. And this is done using the Morel-Ray group and congruence conditions. And theory of canonical height to know how high you have to go in the Morel-Ray group. Okay, and so if you put some computing power and you do look at the right congruences, modulo enough primes, and use this height bound, you can effectively find all the solutions to this equation for k less than or equal to 17 that satisfy this condition on the number of prime divisors of D. So finally, let me just mention, I would be curious to know what other sorts of curves of interest this sort of technique would be useful for. So another example that I'm currently looking at, if you look at an equation related to Fermat equations or Nagel-Lundgren equations, so in S integers, where epsilon is 0 or 1, this is another sort of equation that you expect this technique to work for. There aren't very many places of bad reduction. On the other hand, this will have lots of intorsion over the cyclotomic field. So you run into some problems with possibly with the class group of the cyclotomic field, but I think probably there are some interesting things you can do along these lines. Okay.